Hello, this is Connie Barlow.
And Michael Dowd.
And this is our 12th podcast. It's November 6th, 2009, and the title of this one is Tree Talks About Death. Now, with all our podcasts, we tend to pick a topic based on what was most immediate for us in the prior week, and so we actually had quite a few things happening on the death theme this past week. The first one that I remember is exactly a week ago, Michael and I went down to one of our favorite beaches here on Whidbey Island, and walking back up, we stopped in a meadow, and in the bright sunlight, if I got down on my stomach and looking back towards the sunlight across the meadow, I could see thousands, millions of little spider webs, baby spiders, attempting to catch a thermal in what was otherwise a rather cold day.
It was really quite extraordinary. I'd never seen anything like it, I think, ever.
Yeah, it was the most intense baby spider exit that I had ever seen. More directly, that evening, that was Saturday night, that evening we went to a preview screening of a new documentary that came out of Canada called Grief Walker. And the subject of that documentary, the sometimes called Angel of Death, someone who works in with the dying and the grieving industry and basically brings a naturalistic perspective to it. It was an amazing movie, an amazing commentary by the man.
Stephen Jenkins,
yeah. The other thing is that a couple days after that, we went into Seattle. We were invited by a man, a musician, pianist, fabulous pianist, by the name of Gary Malcolm, who was also being an MC for a conversation cafe happening in Seattle. And he was playing music in an evening program, and one of the things I was unaware of, but that he was rather well known for, is the work that he had done on a combination music, spoken word, artistic creation called Graceful Passages.
This is Gary Malcolm.
Gary Malcolm, yeah. Other things, I guess, are happening. First of all, Michael and I are here in bed. I guess we're playing a kind of a John Lennon Yoko Ono. And I'm inspired to read Well, we do have clothes on here. But you haven't been feeling very well for 3 days. Your fourth chemo infusion has kind of put you down. And it seems an appropriate time for me to read a story, a children's story that I wrote last spring and then edited about a month ago and got it up on the website for free download that deals with death. And it's a way to bring this understanding to children that whatever emotions we may rightfully feel when someone we love dies, there's nothing wrong with death. Death plays a natural and creative role in the cosmos.
Yeah, and I want to say that this story, Connie's been working with this death material. We both have, but mostly Connie for the last several years, really talking about how death is natural and creative, generative at all levels of reality, and is thus no less sacred than life. But this story that she created just in a day, just maybe 6 months ago or a little longer than that, I think is pure genius. I think that this way of getting this death material, these ideas out around death, our best collective understanding of the nature of death in the universe, can radically transforming the thinking of individuals and possibly, hopefully, the thinking of society as a whole, Western society around death. Now, that's a big claim, but you'll see. I think this is powerful, powerful stuff. I think this is one of the main things, I believe, that Connie's going to be remembered for generations from now.
And I know that the day after Grief Walker, Michael and I and friends that we live with here in South Whidbey Island engaged in some pretty intense conversations that new ideas came to us about what are the implications at a societal level. So I'm sure at some point we will podcast about ideas that I'm starting to just collectively call our health insurance tragedy of the commons. We'll talk more about that at another podcast. But finally, the last thing is exactly a week ago, I learned that a man who was 77 years old and had become a father figure for me when my own father died when I was 13. He was our next door neighbor, really hung out with us kids a lot, helped us build an ice rink, all kinds of things, that he died. And so death is on my mind. This children's story is called Tree Talks About Death, and we're going to do the whole thing here It's in five parts. It has five chapters, and so it can either be done all in one evening session, a parent with a kid as a bedtime story, or it can be done in five separate evenings broken out by chapters. I might just mention that the reason I have this kind of form, there's no pictures and there's a lot of interaction that'll be going on with it, and Michael will be playing the role of the child. He will be the one interacting with me. And part of the reason I'm doing this is that this is how I was raised. My father would come in every night and lie down on either my sister's bed or mine and just tell us what we call the make-up story. No pictures, no book. We just closed our eyes, and often he would ask us at different junctures in the story to make some decisions about the character or what happened next. And I attribute my really strong visual imagination to that long childhood learning experience. Tree talks about death. All right, Michael, you got some choices here. The main character is going to be a child. Do you want it to be a girl or a boy?
A girl.
A girl. Okay, we'll have it be a girl. And there's also going to be in this story, it's all about a dog that's recently died. What's the name of the girl's dog?
Cookie.
Cookie. Oh, that was your childhood dog, wasn't it?
Yeah, Berdoodle.
What color should Cookie be?
It's a Dalmatian.
A Dalmatian.
It's black and white, or a liver and white spots.
Okay. Cookie died last week. I cried a lot then. I found one of Cookie's old tennis balls in the grass today, and that made me cry again. Why did Cookie have to die? Why does anything have to die? The girl was talking to her favorite tree. This was the tree that she liked to climb more than any other tree in the neighborhood. What kind of tree do you think it was?
An apple tree.
So it was an apple tree. Using both hands, the girl grabbed onto the lowest branch of the apple tree. Then she swung her legs up to the first spot on the trunk where she could gain a foothold. Up and over a few more limbs, she soon arrived at the spot where three sturdy branches come together to form a kind of nest. It was a nest big enough to hold a child, but not so big that she would have to worry about falling through. The girl had taken naps safely in these branches several times before, but never before had she come to the tree feeling quite this sad and... Was she feeling sad and angry, or sad and confused, or sad and troubled, or sad and forlorn?
Sad and angry.
Okay. So the girl was feeling sad and angry. The girl was feeling sad and angry not just about her dog dying. She also worried whether her parents would have to die too, and how soon. The girl then started wondering if she herself would have to die, and when that might happen. The sad and angry girl grew sleepy. She was becoming drowsy, very drowsy. So she closed her eyes. A gust of wind swept through the apple tree. Now all the leaves were moving every which way. Even the sturdy branches swayed, and the girl's tree nest began to sway too. The tree began to rock back and forth, like a cradle. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Just then the girl heard a great rumbling voice that felt like thunder in her chest. The girl sat up with a start. This is what the great rumbling voice said. There would be no trees anywhere in the world were it not for death. The girl listened with astonishment, holding tight to the branches around her. She realized that the voice was coming up through the trunk of the tree. So it was the tree who was speaking. It was the apple tree. The tree continued speaking to the girl. Inside my trunk and branches, only a very thin green layer, just under the bark, is actually alive. The rest of me, all the brown-colored wood inside, is dead. I learned that in school, the girl said with excitement. Then her voice softened. I guess I should be sorry for you that so much of you is actually dead. Ah, said the tree. It is true that only a thin green layer on the inside and all these beautiful green leaves on the outside are what gives me life. But it is the dead part within my trunk and branches that gives me my strength. Think about it. How could I stand tall against the wind were it not for the dead wood inside me? The tree continued. Each year, the thin green layer of tiny living cells dies and stiffens into brown wood, while a new green layer of tiny living cells is born on the outer side of it, just under the bark. The girl asked, "Are you sad each year when the green layer dies?" "Oh, yes," the tree replied. "I am sad each time I have to say goodbye to something I love. Even so, I am grateful that none of my cells lives forever." "Grateful?" asked the girl incredulously and with anger in her voice. "How can you be grateful when you have to say goodbye to something you love?" A gust of wind passed through the trees and branches. The tree said nothing. Worried that her outburst may have silenced her favorite tree, the girl spoke again. "I am grateful that you told me the story of the thin green layer that keeps you alive. I'm grateful to learn that the dead wood inside you keeps you strong. But please, I want to know why my dog had to die. Can you tell me why I had to say goodbye to Cookie?" "That is a question I cannot answer," rumbled the apple tree. "I know nothing of dogs. I know only about rain and thunder, sunlight and wind, and about birds and squirrels who like to make their nests among my branches and leaves." The tree continued. "I also know far too much about all the creatures that eat my leaves, especially..." Did the tree know far too much about caterpillars, aphids, katydids, or leaf-cutting ants?
Caterpillars.
So the tree knew too much about caterpillars. Nevertheless, the tree did have a suggestion for the girl. The tree said, "I suggest you go talk to Rock. Rock has been here a lot longer than I have. Rock may know the answer to your question." Chapter 2. Rock Talks About Death. Branch by branch, the girl climbed down from the apple tree. Fortunately, she knew of an excellent place to look for rocks. The previous summer, she had discovered rocks of many different colors in one very special place. She had sometimes taken Cookie there with her to explore the beautiful rocks. So as she embarked on the next phase of her quest, a tear rolled down one cheek. This was because the girl wished that Cookie were alongside her now. The girl especially liked to visit this landscape of rocks after a rain. She had discovered that the rocks are more colorful when they are wet, and if the sun comes out, some of the rocks even sparkle in the sunlight. It had rained the previous night, and it was sunny now. As the girl approached her destination, she saw the wet rocks gleaming in the bright sunlight. Even though she was still very sad, the sparkles in the rocks made her smile. One rock caught her attention immediately. She bent down and picked it up. What kind of rock did the girl pick up? Do you think it was a rough piece of sandstone? Or perhaps it was a speckled piece of granite? Or maybe it was a chunk of limestone with fossils in it? So which was it, sandstone, granite, or limestone?
I like speckled granite.
Speckled granite. So the girl picked up a piece of speckled granite that fit perfectly in the palm of her hand. Looking closely, she admired how the tiny light and dark crystals within it sparkled in the sunlight. She especially liked a particular kind of mineral crystal that sparkled a lot. What crystal do you think she liked the best? Was it the shiny black flakes of mica within the granite? Or did she prefer the clear crystals of quartz? Or maybe the girl preferred the gray and pink crystals of feldspar? So which crystals did she like best? Mica, quartz, or feldspar?
Mica.
Mica. Okay, so the girl especially liked to look at the sparkling crystals of mica within the piece of speckled granite that she held in the palm of her hand. Just then the rock began to speak. The rock spoke softly, almost in a whisper, like this. In order to hear what the whispering rock had to say, the girl raised the palm of her hand to her ear with the rock in it, and she listened carefully, very carefully. "I am granite," whispered the rock. "I exist only because, after many millions of years, the ocean floor is pushed under the edges of the continents. All the ocean rock and mud that is pushed and squeezed under the continents eventually is pushed so far down into the earth that it melts into liquid rock. Then the liquid rock starts to rise up through the ground. Moving upward, the liquid rock bulges the land above it, and mountains are born. When the liquid rock stops moving upward, it cools, and it turns into me. It turns into granite. So you see, there would be no granite if the rock and mud on the floor of the ocean never vanished beneath continents. I am grateful that the ocean floor does not last forever." "Oh," the girl said thoughtfully. The rock spoke again. "You see, even these things that seem to you humans like they last forever, well, they die too. And they must die in order for Earth to thrive. Mountains die by eroding away particle by particle. Lakes die by filling up with sand and mud washed down from the mountains. Even oceans die when they are squeezed under continents, and the shells of sea creatures fossilize into rock too." "Hmm," said the girl. "I think I understand why death is important for you. I think I understand why death is important for a rock. But I am a human, and I love my dog very much, so please tell me, why do pets have to die? Why did Cookie have to die?" "That is a question I cannot answer," admitted the rock. "It is true that I am very old. Alas, I know nothing of dogs. But I do know someone who has a lot of experience with death. Go talk to Spider. Spider may know the answer you seek." Chapter 3. Spider Talks About Death. The girls set the rock down gently among the other colorful rocks. She had asked the rock the same question she had asked her favorite tree, and even though she now knew why rocks are grateful that mountains and lakes and oceans and sea creatures do not live forever, the girl could not figure out how mountains and lakes and oceans and sea creatures might have anything to do with her dog. Thus, the answer that the rock had given her did not address her own particular concern about death. The answer that rock had given her did not make her feel any less sad and angry. So the girl put the rock down. Before she turned to continue her quest, the girl paused to admire all the colors and sparkles in the field of rocks around her. She was grateful that the sun was still shining brightly. The girl remembered a dirt trail near her home where she sometimes saw spiders. So here's a question for you. Do you think that the dirt trail goes through a forest of tall trees? Or does it pass through a meadow full of grasses and wildflowers that sway in the breeze?
Forest of tall trees.
Forest of tall trees. When the girl arrived at the edge of the forest of tall trees, she stopped to look for where the trail began. The trail was always a little bit hard to find, but she spotted it and walked over to where it entered the forest. The girl knew she would have to walk very slowly in order to spot a spider. She knew she had to look carefully at the spaces between the plants on either side of the trail. Actually, she decided not to look for spiders. She decided to look for their webs. The webs would be much easier to spot. So the girl began to walk slowly along the dirt trail through the forest. She walked first with her head turned to the right, searching for spider webs. Then she walked a few steps with her head turned to the left, and then to the right, and then again to the left. Just as she was beginning to turn her head once more to the right, she gasped and came to a standstill. Oh no! There was a spider web that stretched right across the trail, exactly in front of her face. The spider looked gigantic because it was only... How many inches was the spider from the girl's nose?
4.
So the spider was only 4 inches away from the girl's nose. So she took one step backward to where she felt safer, and she said, "Hey, spider. Rock sent me to speak to you. I understand that you may know a bit about death." "Well, indeed I do. Death is part of the way that I make my living." "I know that," said the girl. "I have seen little moths and bugs caught in spider webs, and I know that you spiders will eat them."
"That is not exactly correct," countered the spider. "When an insect flies into my web, I feel the web vibrate as the insect struggles to free itself. But my silk is very sticky, and only the largest insects can free themselves. Meanwhile, I rush out to the spot and quickly cast more strands of sticky silk over its wings to entangle the insect even more. Then I inject sleeping potion into it. The insect calms down, goes to sleep, and later I suck out all the juices from its body. Yum!" The girl frowned and shook her head from side to side, saying, "I have a better way of eating. I don't have to kill my food." "Ah," said the spider, "even if you don't kill your own food, somebody else does that for you. You depend on death just as much as I do."
"Well, maybe I'll become a vegetarian then," snapped the girl.
"Even vegetarians depend on death," said the spider. "How do you think plants feel when you or the farmers yank them out of the ground or lop off their stems and leaves? How do you think a pumpkin seed or a walnut feels when it is crunched between your teeth, or when potatoes are baked in the oven?"
Okay, I get it," admitted the girl. "You can't have food without something dying, even if it is just a..." What kind of vegetable or fruit did the girl name?
Broccoli.
"Precisely," confirmed the spider. "Broccoli is part of the web of life, too. The web of life is, in fact, a gentle way to describe exactly who eats whom, how we are all connected to one another ecologically, based on what we eat. There would, after all, be no web of life without death, without somebody dying to become food for somebody else. And so I am grateful for each and every insect that crashes into my web."
"Do you tell that to the insect?" demanded the girl, who was feeling a bit sassy now. "Do you say thank you to the fly before you inject your poison into its struggling body?"
"Well, do you?" countered the spider.
"Huh?" said the girl, confused.
The spider elaborated.
"Do you give thanks before you crunch down on a poor, helpless broccoli?"
The spider chuckled and scurried over to an edge of its web, then said, "Speaking of the web of life, my web is looking a little tattered right now. I need to do some repairs. Please excuse me as I attend to my mending."
But, stammered the girl, "I still don't understand why Cookie had to die. Nobody was trying to eat my dog. The veterinarian said that Cookie died of old age. But Cookie was only 9 years old. My brother is 9 years old, and he is still just a boy. How could a dog die of old age at 9 years old?"
"Mmm," said the spider, creeping back slowly to the center of the web. "How old do you think I am?"
"I don't know," responded the girl. "You look really sleek and shiny. I suppose other spiders would consider you very good looking."
"You can tell how old I am by knowing what time of year it is," encouraged the spider. "Is the time of cold approaching? Is the time approaching when drops of dew gleam in the sunlight on my web at dawn?"
"Well, yes," responded the girl. "Autumn has already begun. I can tell because..."
Did the girl know it was autumn because the leaves on the apple tree were beginning to turn color? Or because dew was on her lawn in the early morning? Or because she had to start wearing a jacket even on sunny days? Which do you think? Leaves turning color, dew, or jacket?
Jacket. She had to wear a jacket.
Jacket. Okay, she had to wear a jacket. "Ah, then, I will soon be finished," sighed the spider. "No spider of my kind ever lives to be even 1 year old. We all die of old age long before then. We die when the time of cold arrives and the insects stop flying. When the insects stop flying, there is no more food for us to eat. And one morning it is so cold that we spiders just don't wake up. Does that frighten you? Asked the girl with some hesitation.
I actually look forward to joining the feast, said the spider, but from the other side of the table, so to speak.
I don't understand, said the girl.
We spiders have an old saying passed down through the generations. When autumn approaches, we say, I have eaten so many tasty meals in my lifetime. It is only proper that I should now return the favor.
The girl was now exasperated. She was frustrated because tree could not answer her question. Rock could not answer her question. And now she was pretty sure that spider would not answer it either. Angrily, she lashed out,
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Maybe it is a mistake. Maybe Earth could have been made in a way so that nobody had to die. Nobody would have to enter the feast from the other side of the table. Maybe Earth could have been the kind of planet where I would still be throwing tennis balls for Cookie to fetch.
Just then a cloud passed in front of the sun. The sunlight was gone, and a gust of cold wind jostled the spider web so that it bounced back and forth. The girl pulled up the collar of her jacket. Then she looked skyward to see what had happened to the sun.
Chapter 4. A Voice in the Sky Talks About Death. I think I hear an earthling down there, boomed the voice. I think I hear an earthling who is not especially happy with her planet at this moment.
The girl pulled back in fright from the powerful voice echoing down from the sky. Spider fled up a silk string and hid under a... What did Spider hide under? Was it a green leaf, a yellow flower, or something else?
A green leaf.
A green leaf. So Spider hid under a green leaf. Meanwhile, the girl caught her breath and stammered, Is that the sun speaking to me?
I am, responded the voice in the sky. I know you are sad and angry. I know you have a question, too. Many others before you have asked that same question. It is a question that does not seem to go away.
Is it a question that you can answer? Asked the girl hopefully.
Let me tell you about sunlight, said the voice. All of the vegetables and fruit that you eat, including broccoli, depend on sunlight in order to grow. And all of the insects that Spider eats ultimately depend on sunlight, too, because those insects eat plants, or they eat smaller insects who eat plants. So you see, sunlight energizes the whole web of life.
What about my tears? Do my tears come from sunlight, too? Asked the girl.
Yes, responded the voice in the sky. Your body uses the energy of sunlight to fashion tears from water and salt inside your eyes.
How about my words? Do my words come from sunlight? Asked the girl.
Yes, the very thoughts in your mind, young one, are in truth the energy of sunlight transformed into the energy of a human mind. This happens thanks to all the sun-fed plants and animals that you have eaten throughout your life. Your brain uses the energy of sunlight to think thoughts. Then the muscles in your mouth and throat use the energy of sunlight to speak those thoughts into words.
Said the girl as she tilted her head and squinted her eyes in a mischievous way.
If my voice comes from the energy of sunlight, she began, then does this mean that you are listening to yourself ask this question right now?
After a pause, the voice continued on a course of its own.
I know that you are angry with this world, said the voice. Like many of your kind, you have wondered why there must be death.
The girl nodded.
You have already learned all that tree can teach you about death. You have already listened to rock. And you have heard from spider, too. So what you are asking of me is simply to tell you about your dog, is that correct?
Yes, exclaimed the girl, her face brightening.
To tell you about your dog, however, I need to tell you about all dogs. That is, how dogs came to be.
The voice in the sky continued. I am very old, so I have seen it happen. Your Earth story is not a story that has been passed down to me through the generations, like Spider's story of the feast. Rather, it is a story that I have witnessed myself. I have watched the story of how rocks came to be on Earth, and of how life came to be. I have watched Earth's story unfold ever since the first rays of sunlight began to bathe your planet. I was there when ocean floor squeezed under continents. I was there when the first generations of mountains all eroded away. I was there when complex molecules assembled into the very first forms of tiny life. I was there when the simple life forms began to wriggle and swim, and then when some evolved into life forms that could breathe on land, and then when some of those land breathers became the great dinosaurs, some of whom ate tall trees composed of many living and dead cells. "Wow!" uttered the girl. "You saw all that?" The voice continued. "I have watched as you humans became clever enough to study the rocks and to figure out that the Earth is very, very old. I have watched as curiosity compelled you humans to look for fossils, to probe and compare DNA, and thus to figure out the family of relationships in the Tree of Life. Yes, I have watched humans just like you learn a great deal about your planet's ecology and how Earth life evolved over billions of years. I commend your species for those talents and for your persistence. Impressive. So tell me, young one, what is your favorite dinosaur?" The girl said that her favorite dinosaur was... What was the girl's favorite dinosaur?
Triceratops.
"Yes," said the voice in the sky. "Triceratops was a very fine dinosaur indeed. Now tell me, do you think Cookie's ancestors lived in the time of the great dinosaurs?" "I suppose they would have had to," replied the girl. "But Cookie's ancestors probably didn't look much like dogs back then."
"Correct," the voice continued. "Do you think your ancestors were alive during the time of the dinosaurs, too?"
"Well, yes, but there were no apes back then, so human ancestors must have been something else, something smaller, maybe something like a ground squirrel or woodchuck or gopher that lived in a burrow under a tree and ate leaves and seeds and tried to keep safe from the dinosaurs."
"Correct again. But there is something more you need to know." The voice paused, then continued. "You see, young one, your ancestor and Cookie's ancestor were the very same creature back then. You and your dog share the same great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents.
I think I like that idea, but I'm not quite sure," said the girl. "Actually, I think that's kind of cool, if a bit creepy, but still, it's cool. Yeah, I like that idea. I like being related to my dog. I like thinking about how we share a lot of the same DNA and stuff." The girl grew serious once again. "But what do ancestors and dinosaurs and DNA have to do with understanding why there is death?"
"Death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth," said the voice monotonously. "The circle of life is what made evolution happen. If nothing since the very beginning had ever died, do you think anything more complex than bacteria would be here today?"
Before the girl had a chance to think, the voice in the sky answered its own question.
"Of course not," boomed the voice. "All the animals and plants and mushrooms and amoebas on your planet are here only because of the creative role that death plays in the evolution of life. Truly, in a world without death, there would be no life."
"So tell me, young one," continued the voice from the sky, "do you think there would be any room on this planet for you if nobody ever died? If your great-great-grandparents were still alive, and if their great-great-grandparents were still alive, and if everybody else's ancestors were all still alive, too, do you think there would be room on this planet for you? Do you think there would be room on this planet for any children at all? Just then, the most adorable baby animal emerged from behind a bush and ran over to the girl, rubbing against her ankle. This darling baby animal with the cutest face looked up with big, friendly eyes. Immediately, the girl bent down and picked up the creature and held it close. She nuzzled its nose with her nose, and a gigantic smile spread across the girl's face. What was that baby animal?
A little rat.
A little rat. Oh. So the baby animal was a little rat. The voice in the sky spoke again. Contemplate this, young one. Without the death of elders, there would be no room for children. There would be no room for human children. There would be no room for rat children, nor for caterpillar children, or broccoli children, or apple children. There would be no more room for any other kind of children you can think of. So the fact that people and pets and everything else eventually have to die is surely very sad. But that same fact is also very important. Without the death of elders, there would be no more room for any more children to ever be born. Without death, there could be no new life. Just then, the baby rat wriggled out of the girl's hands, leaped to the ground, and vanished once again behind the bush. The girl looked back up at the sky. The cloud was still obscuring the sun, but the cloud was beginning to thin. She looked down at her feet, thoughts racing through her mind. Maybe planets are too small for life, the girl thought to herself. Maybe somewhere out in the universe is a place so big that there's plenty of room for new babies to be born and for new life forms to evolve. But where the older generations and the older species don't have to die. Maybe there is a place where nobody has to die, ever. The girl looked over at the spider web, but spider was still hiding beneath the... What was it hiding beneath?
A leaf.
It was a green leaf? Okay. But spider was still hiding beneath the green leaf. So the girl kept thinking. She thought, yes, maybe there is a place up there where nobody needs to eat. Maybe the creatures can all just eat the light from their own closest star, like the plants do down here. Yes, that's what they do. Everybody could be like a plant, eating only starlight, even if they don't all look like plants. So maybe there's a place with life somewhere in the universe, but without death. Maybe there's a place like that somewhere up there. The girl looked back up into the sky again. I think you need to go into the darkness, young one, said the voice. I think you need to go into the dark. The voice in the sky continued. So after your supper tonight, an hour after sunset, step out onto your porch, alone, all by yourself. And then look up into the night sky. Search for a star that is approaching death. Search for a star that is not white or blue, but that is orange or red. Search for a red giant or a red supergiant. There you will learn your final answer. The girl had to strain her ears to hear the last words, as the cloud was thinning and sunlight was beginning to break through. She heard the names Red Giant and Red Supergiant. She heard that these stars are reddish or orange, and she thought she heard the words, Final Answer. The girl could hardly wait to return home and get on the internet in order to learn what Red Giants and Red Supergiants are and how to spot one in the night sky. Chapter 5. Star Talks About Death. The dark cloud drifted away from where it had covered the face of the sun, and the voice in the sky spoke no more. The girl wasn't sure that she fully understood the voice in the sky's answer as to why her dog Cookie had died, and why everything eventually has to die. But the girl's confusion didn't bother her quite so much anymore, because now she had something to do that she could accomplish all by herself. The girl's quest for an answer was now taking her in a familiar direction. Got a science question? use the internet. The girl was really good at using the internet to find answers to science questions. For example, she had already used the internet to discover why. What answer to a science question had the girl already discovered by using the internet?
I have no idea.
You can think of one.
How deep is the ocean?
How deep is the ocean? Okay, so the girl was really good at using the internet to get answers to her questions about the Earth and its creatures and rocks and fossils, and also about the vast universe with all its stars and galaxies and black holes and oceans. The girl was so excited about this new phase in her quest that she skipped and ran all the way home. She even invented a little song about red giant stars that she sang over and over all the way home. It was a simple little song, and the girl got happier and happier each time she sang it. The people that she ran past on her journey home mostly heard her singing this line, "I love red giant stars." So tell me, what simple song do you think that the girl was singing on her way home?
I love red giant stars.
Could you sing it again?
I love red giant stars.
That's sweet. That's a sweet little song. I bet she enjoyed singing it. The girl rounded a corner, and there she saw her home. She ran even faster. But there were a few obstacles in her path that she had to jump over or swerve around. First, she had to jump over a baseball bat, and then a skateboard. She had to swerve around a garbage can that was blocking the sidewalk, and then a lawnmower. She had to speed up to get past the water sprinkler before it rotated over the sidewalk again. Finally, she had one last obstacle to negotiate before she reached the door of her house. So what was this final obstacle?
A bench that had been turned over.
A bench that had been turned over. Whew! So the girl finally got past the bench. She threw open the door, raced into the room with the computer, and started to type some key words into the search engine. What key words did she type in?
Red giant.
Anything else?
Super red giant.
So she typed in the keywords red giant and super red giant. Her internet search was a success. By dinner time, the girl felt fully prepared for the evening to come. She was proud of herself for learning all on her own about red giant stars and red supergiant stars. She could hardly wait for the sunset and nightfall. She especially wanted to see one of the three brightest orange stars. She wanted to see the red giant star Arcturus, or either of the two red supergiants, Antares or Betelgeuse. At dinner, the girl got to eat her favorite food, but she was too excited to really enjoy it. Instead, she was thinking about stars. What food did the girl eat for dinner?
Mashed potatoes, corn, and chicken.
So dinner that evening was mashed potatoes, corn, and chicken. The sun set and the sky grew dark. The girl who earlier that day had spoken with a tree, a rock, a spider, and a voice in the sky stepped outside onto the porch. Quietly and with great anticipation, she repeated to herself the instructions she had been given. She remembered the sound of the voice in the sky, too. The voice had said, "Search for a star that is approaching death. Search for a star that is not white or blue, but that is orange or red. Search for a red giant or a red supergiant." The girl stood on the porch waiting for her eyes to adjust to the darkness. When she could begin to see the porch steps and the shapes of the trees and shrubs, she decided to venture out onto the lawn. Even though being alone in the dark outdoors was a little scary for her, the girl walked down the steps and out onto the grass. She wanted to see as much of the night sky as she possibly could. So the girl walked out to the center of the lawn. Then she stopped and looked up. 1 second passed. 2 seconds passed. 3 seconds passed. There it is! There it is! Shining brightly in the night sky was a beautiful orange-colored star. The girl could tell by the positions of the bright neighboring stars that the orange star was... What was the name of the orange star that she saw? Was it the red giant Arcturus, the red supergiant Antares, or the red supergiant Betelgeuse?
Betelgeuse.
Betelgeuse. So the name of the orange star that the girl saw was Betelgeuse. Oh, exclaimed the girl, there you are, there you are. By now the girl was becoming accustomed to the idea that humans are not the only things in the universe who might occasionally talk to her. So she was not at all surprised when Betelgeuse began to speak. Well, well, good evening, Earthling. I was told that you might have a question for me tonight, so speak. I do have a question, the girl replied with excitement. Today the sun, at least I think it was the sun, told me to find you. I was told that you would have the final answer to help me understand why death happens, why it has to happen, and why my dog Cookie had to die. That is indeed an important question, said Betelgeuse solemnly. I suppose that ever since your ancestors of long ago began asking questions, they wondered about death too. Hey, I wonder if my ancestors who lived during the time of the dinosaurs and who looked something like a squirrel asked this question too. What's a squirrel? Asked Betelgeuse. What's a dinosaur? The girl shook her head, thinking to herself, okay, so this orange star way beyond our solar system doesn't know much about Earth history, but it probably does know a lot about the rest of the universe. The girl looked up at the star and said eagerly, Betelgeuse, maybe you know about a special place out there in our Milky Way galaxy, or maybe in some other galaxy. It would be a place much better than Earth. It would be a place where creatures live and where creatures keep getting born. But nobody has to die. Nobody ever has to die there, and so nobody ever has to be sad. Not here, said the star. There's no place like that anywhere in our Milky Way galaxy. I, of course, do not know much about any of the other galaxies out there in the universe. But of the 200 billion star systems in our own galaxy, the Milky Way, I can tell you this. I can tell you that there is no such place as the one you describe. That's it? Protested the girl. That's the answer? That's the final answer? The girl was becoming very frustrated now, so she forgot to be courteous and respectful when addressing the star. Instead, she lashed out, saying, Your answer doesn't make me feel any better. It just makes me feel worse. When Betelgeuse spoke again, the girl noticed a touch of sadness in the star's voice. Betelgeuse said, That's because the reason you were told to seek me out was not to help you feel better. It was to help me feel better. What? Stammered the girl. But you are a star. Why would you talk like that? How could I, a mere earthling, a human, a kid even, how could I possibly help a star to feel better? Well, unlike your star, I have no planets orbiting me that have a chance to produce life. So I don't know much about biology. I know I look good up here, but good looks are just on the surface. I want to feel good about myself. Before I die, I want to know that I have accomplished something important. Something that will carry on after I'm gone. Oh, the girl said softly. Betelgeuse continued. You see, when stars get close to dying, we begin to squeeze helium atoms into a kind of atom that is absolutely essential for life, carbon. At that time, we turn from white or blue or yellow to orange or even red. I've known about Earth life for a long time, and I know that Earth life needs carbon. How do you know about Earth life? Asked the girl. Hey, All of the stars in this sector of the Milky Way galaxy know about Earth life, the star replied. We'd all love to be able to bring forth what your own star, the Sun, has helped to create. We'd love to have creatures like moths and bats and owls flying in the starlight at night. We'd love to have creatures like humans gazing up at us and telling stories about why some of us look orange, and some of us look blue, and some of us look white or yellow. The girl smiled. She was proud of her planet and all its creatures. The orange star continued. So, of course, I know that Earthlings exist and that Earthlings require carbon. But no Earthling has ever told me why life is important. No Earthling has ever told me why it is important that carbon flung out from dying stars like me, why that's important and why that makes life possible. So I wonder why it is important for me in my elder years to be making carbon right now. Tell me, why is life important? Wait a minute, said the girl, thinking. Do you mean that I have little particles of stars inside me? Yes, you do, assured the star. The girl continued, do you mean that all the carbon atoms in my cells, and in all the carbohydrate foods that I eat, and in the carbon dioxide that I exhale, that they were all created inside stars that look like you? You got it, kid. Wow! Exclaimed the girl, now running in circles, her arms waving crazily up toward the stars. Betelgeuse laughed and said, in a way, red giant stars and red supergiant stars who lived and died before your solar system was born are your ancestors. They are your most ancient ancestors. When those ancestor stars were dying, they recycled back to the galaxy much of the carbon that they had made during their lifetimes. That carbon, that stardust, is now right there inside of you. I am made of stardust! I am made of stardust! Yippee! Exclaimed the girl, who by now was spinning out of control. The orange star watched the jubilant girl with delight and then asked its own burning question one more time. Why is life important to you? Why is it important that there be Earthlings all connected through the web of life and all sharing the same ancient ancestors from long, long ago? Why is it important that there be life in this universe? The star continued, until I know that answer, I can't be sure that this business of making carbon is really worth much over the long haul. I can't be sure that something important will carry on after I am gone, something important that will use the carbon atoms that I am creating right now. The girl stopped twirling and looked directly at the star. Hands on her hips, her smile melted into a frown, and she took a deep breath that came out as a frustrated sigh like this. Keeping her gaze on the star, the girl said, what a silly question. Of course life is important. If life weren't important, I wouldn't be asking questions about why death has to happen. I wouldn't really care. But I do care. So that means life is important. But what does life actually do? Asked Betelgeuse. I guess it's not so much what you do, countered the girl. Rather, it's how you feel about what you do and how others feel about it, too. The girl knew she needed to give an example, so this is the example she came up with. She said, for example, Cookie's life was important because I loved Cookie, and Cookie loved me. I will always remember this one very special dog. Right now, I can't actually think of anything more important than the fact that Cookie and I loved each other. Oh, said Betelgeuse quietly. The girl continued, so, Betelgeuse, tell me this. How do you feel about your life as a star right now? I guess I feel pretty good talking with you, replied the orange star. You may be young, but you seem to know a lot about what is important. You seem to feel what's important. And just talking with you helps me feel that my own work as a star is important too. So I thank you. Just then, someone whom the girl loved very much opened the door and started calling for her to come in for the night. Who was calling for the girl to come inside?
Her mom.
Her mom. So the girl's mom was calling for her. "Oops, I hear my mom calling for me now," said the girl. "I've got to go back inside. It's time for bed." The girl began walking toward the house, a peaceful smile on her face. As she stepped onto the porch, she stopped and swiveled to look back at the star. "I love you, Beetlejuice," she said softly. "I love you too," replied the star. "And thank you for talking with me," said the girl. "You haven't answered my question, but for some reason that question doesn't feel so troubling anymore."
"Me too," said the star. "Me too."
How the story ends is up to you. Do you think that when the girl went back inside and got ready for bed and dreamed that night about ancestor stars and voices in the sky and about spiders and rocks and trees? Or did she instead wake up in a nest of branches in the apple tree with sunlight from her own star caressing her face? Which do you think it was?
She woke up in the apple tree.
She woke up in the apple tree. Good night, darling.
Good.